This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mutholker.
Ahead on the program, laser scanning instruments at the University of Arkansas help an artist recreate Machu Picchu for National Geographic magazine. Also, the Artist Laboratory Theater will host the second Sheet Ford Experience this Friday and Saturday at Matt Miller Studio near the Fayetteville Town Square.
But first, Community Clinic based in Springdale provides medical care to the working poor of Northwest Arkansas. With satellite offices in Rogers and Siloam Springs, it now seeks to expand into South Washington County. Its funding, however, is caught up in federal congressional budget wrangling. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, over the next 5 years, will deliver $11 billion to community health centers across America, in part to serve an estimated 20 million new patients. The money is being issued by formula and via grants. Community Clinic, which helps the working poor in Northwest Arkansas, has applied for some funding. A pair of Marshallese children play with a toy in a clinic reception room in Springdale. Community Clinic was founded in 1989 by a small volunteer faith group to help uninsured and low-income patients. 7 years later, the clinic settled into the Jones Resource Center on Emma Street in Springdale. Last year, 75,000 patients came here, as well as to two satellite offices in Rogers and Siloam Springs. The clinic has a 180-person staff, including full-time physicians and advanced nurse practitioners. Cambry Horn Brooks is director of development. She does lots of grant writing.
We provide primary care, which is family practice for chronic disease management, such as diabetes and hypertension. Pediatrics, all the whole spectrum of well child checkups, as well as sick child care, and prenatal care. We see women all the way through the third trimester, and then we have partnering OBGYNs who are willing to see them through delivery. Then we also provide dental care, primarily with children, but we don't just do extractions. It's the full mouth makeup, sealants, fluoride treatment, so we do preventive dental care for kids.
While private care physicians have patient load limits, Community Clinic doesn't. 80% of the clinic's patients live below the federal poverty level. Nearly 40% are uninsured. Marshallese make up 5%, Hispanics 53%. 60% of patients are kids under 19, mostly enrolled in the state's Medicaid Our Kids program. In Arkansas, only the most impoverished or disabled adults are eligible for Medicaid. Statewide, we have 56 community health centers. In 2005, Community Clinic was designated a nonprofit federally qualified health center eligible for federal funding from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
And Community Clinic's budget, if you could see it as a pie chart, 18% of our budget's federal money. The other 18 is homegrown grants, state, local, and national. But the other remaining part of the pie is fee-for-service. So we are sustainable in that sense. So while the federal money is fantastic for us to get a good footing and keep our doors open, the patients contribute to their care on a sliding fee discount, and that makes up the remainder of most of our budget.
Most working class and wealthy Americans count on their doctors to help them when they get sick.
Our number one goal is to provide a medical home. We want patients who are low income and uninsured to seek care for us, not just when they're ill or they have an earache, but when they come in for the preventive care as well. So by doing that, we're lowering the cost of their health care. They're not going to enter the emergency room for non-emergent care, acquire an $800 bill, which is later on going to go unreimbursed, which rolls back into the community. So our role is to prevent chronic disease or developmental issues with children from ever getting to a point where their health care costs are going to become so exuberant that they can't pay for it.
Cambry Horn Brooks says community clinics save the system lots of money in the long run.
We know that uninsured are less likely to seek preventive care. They're less likely to go to a doctor because they're worried about either putting food on the table, putting gas in their tanks, so they're going to avoid care. So that means they're diagnosed later on in their disease, which means their cost for care is higher, and that means it's likely to go unreimbursed.
According to the Arkansas Department of Human Services, a medical intervention for one sick baby reportedly cost Medicaid $57,700. Multiplied by 2,700 infants, Medicaid doled out $158 million just in Arkansas. In 2009, $3.7 billion Medicaid dollars were spent in state, primarily for children and nursing home elders. The Fed picked up 77% of that cost. That's why the Obama administration included community clinics and health care reform funding. Prenatal and early childhood medical interventions will save taxpayers billions of dollars. Plus, community health clinics in particular reduce costly emergency hospital and specialty care, saving $24 billion a year nationally. Beginning in 2014, states will be required to extend health insurance, including Medicaid coverage, to most individuals aged 19 to 64, placing additional burdens on community health centers. Community clinics applied for a small piece of an $11 billion health care reform community health center fund, in part to add another clinic to help folks in Winslow, West Fork, Greenland, and Farmington.
So far we have put application in for a new access point or a new clinic in South Washington County, and that would be $650,000 if awarded, the whole amount. And then we've also asked for, through healthcare reform, money for service expansion and expanded medical capacity, which provides more pediatricians and behavioral health specialists on site for us, and that was at $315,000.
But this week, Congress is looking to gut its fiscal year 2011 federal budget and beyond to reduce the federal deficit, including President Obama's health care reform funding plan. Also, stimulus funding for community health centers has been cut in half by $1.3 billion. Community Clinic got a piece of that, too, improving its Rogers Clinic and opening a new clinic in Siloam Springs 2 years ago.
Right now, we're battling is some of the stimulus money. We got three different chunks. One was for capital, which we can't send back, bricks and mortar. But the other, for expanded medical capacity, was allowed us to open up our site in Siloam Springs. So it looks like right now, with the federal budget, that part of the removal, if you would, part of the spend cuts would be taking the stimulus money back out of Obama's budget. So for a community clinic, that could be the potential of either downsizing or closing the Siloam Springs facility. And also maybe some of the funding that was going towards the providers that are giving care in Springdale and Rogers, we'd have to downsize on the staffing level.
For the first time in its more than 20-year history, Community Clinic may have to contract its services after years of expanding medical care to working poor families across Northwest Arkansas. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
How healthcare reform laws will be implemented in Arkansas is outlined at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement at ACHI.net.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. On the cover of the April issue of National Geographic magazine, a green mountain ridge peeks out through a sea of clouds as the Incas below go about their daily lives in Machu Picchu. Researchers at the Center for Advanced Spatial Technologies, or CAST, at the University of Arkansas, helped an artist recreate the Inca culture. Angie Payne, Adam Barnes, Snow Winters, and Katie Simon were among those involved in the project. Winters says she is thrilled to be a part of the renowned magazine.
Well, I'm just unbelievably excited. I think I'm the one that talks about it the most because I just think about National Geographic as something we grew up. This is what I said yesterday with UATV. It's just, you know, it's something you grew up with, and never did I ever think I'd be a part of it, you know. So it's just, it's really, yeah.
Well, it's part of so many people's lives,
yeah.
Too,
yeah.
And so many generations.
Just very proud of our organization.
The CAST team's involvement in creating this month's magazine cover began with a project in Peru in 2005.
The trip to Machu Picchu was an aside to a larger project that we did in Tiwanaku in Bolivia. And so after we finished the Bolivian project, we drove to Machu Picchu and basically conducted a series of surveys over a week there. We collected a large amount of 3D data, upwards of about, I think the total was like 50 million data points. over the week. And we determined that the best way to scan was to actually scan at night to avoid all the tourists and stuff during the day. So we conducted all of our work at night there. So that was a synopsis of 2005.
So in 2009, as with UCLA, we did a field school. So we had a whole bunch of students. I think it was about 20 students, was it, that came down? 18 yeah. Students, maybe 20 of us in total, that we did a 5-week field school project that started in Cusco, and that's what Adam was involved in. And then the last 3 weeks was in Machu Picchu, where Katie and I and a few other colleagues that aren't here, Malcolm, did. And while we were there, we almost kind of ran into Amanda Hobbs. She's from National Geographic, and she was the one who was researching. She's an art historian researcher, researching a project for Cusco. And so that's where they met in Cusco, and she kind of just tagged along, and we kind of worked a little bit together, she used some of our equipment, I think, at the time, too. I think some GPS stuff for some of the research they were doing, and then she departed, and just maybe over a year ago, they kind of changed paths and said, you know, we're interested in doing Machu Picchu instead, and she knew we'd collected all that data, and so she said, you know, can we get a hold of your data and give it to Dylan Cole so that he can do this art recreation for the front cover. So that's kind of how it started. And so we worked with the data. Angie used the 2005 data and the 2009 data, mm-hmm. Turned into a 3D model. So took those points. I think he did a little cleanup on it, mm-hmm. Turned it into a model that he was able to read in his software, and then did the recreation so that was accurately correct as much as possible anyway.
The UA researchers created the first comprehensive high-resolution 3D data set for the site through the use of high-resolution laser scanning instruments.
We basically have a series of laser scanners here at CAST, and basically what a laser scanner does is it precisely measures and records 3D information for any object or environment. And it basically does that. It takes a series of discrete measurements really quickly and returns what we call a point cloud. The particular instrument that we used in Machu Picchu collects data at a rate of 2,000 points per second. So we're able to survey a large area relatively quickly.
Although there are a variety of applications for this technology, the researchers say helping create the magazine's cover art is definitely a new use of their laser scanning instruments.
That is kind of the first time we've done it in that aspect. Now, Katie's actually working with a gentleman in the art department as far as he's interested in head and body scans.
Yeah, we actually haven't done too much work with him yet. He's interested in using scanning as a way of capturing 3D data to convert into sculpture and then to manipulate it from that point. We haven't done too much with him, but mostly we just try to further the fields of particularly archaeology is what I've been involved with to see if this technology can be used to readdress old research questions or form new research questions. And that's another thing the magazine's really interested in. We also had the chance to meet Heather Pringle, the author of the article, and she's particularly interested in what different types of new technologies can do to, readdress old questions, as well as look at data in a new way that might further the direction or even forge new directions in archaeology. And so
This technology gives you a digital scaled representation of virtually any object or environment. And so that can be used in science, it can be used in art, it can be used in a number of disciplines.
The UA researchers' work allows them to travel to a variety of places such as Greece, Bolivia, and Guatemala. While working at Machu Picchu, the CAST team members got to have experiences that differ from those of the average tourist. For example, Payne was married at the site in 2005.
She was married by the director at night, and there was like 4 other people there, which is, you know, that's a very, very rare.
Doesn't happen a whole lot down there. Yeah.
So it was just really amazing. Both Katie and I got to be there at night, too, in 2009, and it's just, it's otherworldly. It's just unbelievable. You just can't get over the sight and how it feels and just the way it is. And so it was just, you can't even describe it, really.
Yeah, it's an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm. And the typical tourist cannot get on the site at night.
No.
Mm-mm. The reason they had to go at night a lot of times was to scan without people covering the site. During the day, it's completely covered.
Yeah. So that was a very great thing to be able to go in there. You know, they were able to let us in because it's a very protected site, and so they, you know, they put a lot of trust in us to go up there at night with these instruments that we carried up and down the steps and such.
The processed data is now publicly available, along with computer software to manipulate the data and perform measurements, at cast.uark.edu. Angie Payne, Adam Barnes, Snow Winters, and Katie Simon are researchers at the Center for Advanced Spatial Technologies at the University of Arkansas. It's Wednesday, April 6th, 2011. Joining us now in the Anthony Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin, editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And we have cool stuff tonight. Oh, wait, that's why I'm here. The UA Percussion Ensemble Spring Concert is tonight at 7:30 at the Arkansas Union Ballroom at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. A percussion ensemble concert.
Sounds awesome.
Sounds free and fun. And Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors, songwriter and touring artist Drew Holcomb and his backing band The Neighbors, will be in Fayetteville for a show tonight at George's Majestic Lounge. His new album is called Chasing Someday, and it broke into the Billboard 200 album sales chart. Admission is $10, and the show starts at 9 o'clock.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. Country musician Merle Haggard was born on this date in 1937. In March of 1958, Haggard was sent to San Quentin Prison after being convicted for burglary and attempted escape from county jail. While serving a 2.5-year term, he played in the prison's country band and took high school equivalency courses. In 1962, he signed with a small label called Tally Records, for whom he recorded 5 songs, including his debut single, Sing a Sad Song, which rose to number 19 on the country charts. Haggard formed his own backing band, The Strangers, before signing with Capitol Records in 1965. Later that year, the band released its debut self-titled album. In 1967, the single I'm a Lonesome Fugitive soared to the top of the country charts. Later that year, Haggard followed the song's runaway success with Branded Man, his first self-penned number one song. Haggard's streak of number one singles during the 1960s culminated with what would become his signature song and his most controversial recording, Okie from Muskogee. The track earned Haggard the Country Music Association's Entertainer of the Year Award in 1970. Since then, Haggard has released close to 70 albums and 600 songs. Haggard was elected to the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1977 and inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame in 1994. And football still the roughest thing on campus. And the kids here still respect the college dean. And I'm proud to be an Okie from Muskogee. On this date, in 1968, Jefferson County native Bobby Hutton was in a carload of Black Panther Party members who were confronted by Oakland police officers. 2 officers were shot. Later, Elridge, Cleaver, and Hutton, in an incident connected to the earlier shooting, engaged in a 90-minute shootout with police officers. It was reported that Hutton was shot more than 12 times after he had already surrendered and stripped down to his underwear to prove he was not armed. However, police reports stated that Hutton was wearing a long overcoat and that his hands could not be seen when he exited the building. The death of Hutton was a major event in the Black Panther Party's history, becoming the rallying cry for the movement. Explorers Robert E. Peary and Matthew A. Henson became the first men to reach the North Pole on this date in 1909. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This This is Ozarks at Large. Here are some things we thought you should know about. Tickets to the Eureka Springs Blues Weekend are on sale now. The annual festival is scheduled for June 2nd through the 5th, and headliners include Elvin Bishop and Coco Montoya. The event is a fundraiser for the Blues Foundation Heart Fund and Turpentine Creek Wildlife Refuge. Individual tickets start at $10, and all tickets have a $5 processing fee. Weekend and VIP passes are also available. You can find more details at eurekaspringsblues.com.
Today is the deadline to buy a ticket for the Arkansas State Lottery's first and perhaps last $1 million raffle. When tickets went on sale last summer, officials said they would draw for $2 million grand prizes when all 500,000 $10 tickets had been sold. They anticipated that would happen in September, but tickets sold more slowly than expected, and now, some 9 months later, the drawing will take place regardless of whether all the tickets are sold. Spokeswoman Julie Baldridge says sales have picked up since the announcement of a firm date to end the game.
We had almost $100,000 in sales in one day this weekend, and while we'll be surprised if we reach the $5 million mark in sales, we certainly won't be surprised to come close enough to that to feel really good about the profits from this game, and those profits mean scholarships.
Baldridge says the break-even point was 300,000 tickets, or $3 million. At this point, she says the game will produce at least $1 million for scholarships. But the game's slow ticket sales, Baldridge adds, are indicative of Arkansas Lottery players' preference for instant scratch-off tickets rather than draw games.
Backyard poultry flock owners and others interested in poultry, incubation, or rodent and insect control are invited to a backyard poultry conference Friday and Saturday in Fayetteville. The conference will feature speakers from the U of A, the University of Tennessee, and the National Sustainable Agriculture Information Service. Admission is $25 and includes lunches and refreshments. More information is available at 979-540-6448 or email president@guineafowlinternational.org.
Junior All-American Jamie Pisani has been named the South Central Gymnast of the Year by the National Association for Collegiate Gymnastics Coaches. The New Jersey native is the first Razorback to win the award. Pisani has earned 6 All-American honors during the last 2 years. The Razorbacks won the NCAA North Central Region in Denver last week and will compete in the NCAA Championship in Cleveland April 15th through the 17th.
On Saturday, a PBS Planet Forward special will feature a team of chemical engineering and honors college students from the University of Arkansas. Their research project, a device that can convert algae into fuel, will be discussed and evaluated by a panel of experts. 4 other projects will also be covered in the Earth Day program. You can watch the show online at planetforward.com starting Saturday morning. AETN will also air the show at 1:30 a.m. April 9th.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. The Artist Laboratory Theater will host the second Sheetfort Experience this Friday and Saturday at Matt Miller Studio near the Fayetteville Town Square. This year's theme, Show and Tell, will feature many stories found online, in the newspaper, just about anywhere. The event promises to be a one-of-a-kind experience.
Hey, guys. Sorry about that. Hey. But we had to give it a little time for our scripts. So I think the best way to do this is a read-through. But let's talk a little bit about, first of all...
Erica Wilhite, Artistic Director of Artist Laboratory Theater, addresses actors and improv artists in almost a warehouse-like space. They're gathered to practice for the second Sheetfort Experience being hosted on the 8th and 9th of April. Erica says Sheetfort is an experiment on how one experiences theater or another person's story.
The show itself is a presentation of found material, found on the internet, found in the world, in our environment, found locally, found in other places of the world, that we have, that's come to us either through our friends or just things that we've had on our own or that we have sought out. And we're using this material and presenting it in a first person manner, as if it were a play, a character. But we're not memorizing it. It's not a play. It's a reading. And it's turned out to work out sort of like a variety show where there's lots of music. It is multimedia and interactive. So some of our stories are through videos. I have actors on videos acting them out. I have live actors in the ensemble acting it out. And I have voiceovers. I'm featuring actors from the university, local actors from some community theaters in town, and my own ensemble and company.
The Artist Laboratory Theater is a fairly new group. It is an experimental theater company. Erica, who moved to Fayetteville about a year and a half ago, says the first Sheet Fort experience was hosted at the Matt Miller Studio near Fayetteville Town Square last November.
It was a different show inside the Sheet Fort. The philosophy of the Sheet Fort as a state of mind is always the same. The ultimate objective is the Sheet Fort. We want to get in it together and be together as a community. But there also is a show. And the last Sheet Fort show was a staged reading of a Charles Mee play called Time to Burn, which is a script that the theater is interested in maybe producing one day. And so maybe the next Sheet Fort we do will be another play. This one we have found and put together as a company. But it's who knows what it will be next. But if it's in a Sheet Fort, it's always about the Sheet Fort.
Since Art Lab Theater is a small theater company, it has adapted to the idea of performing in alternative spaces. The group is practicing in space provided by Be Unlimited, a graphic design and screen printing business in Fayetteville.
We like the idea of Sheet Fort because of the intimacy it creates. And it's a Sheet Fort for grown-ups. No kids allowed. It's actually a little smutty. It's very grown-up humor. But you crawl inside. And there will be seating alternatives. If you want a seat, we'll have a row of seats in the back, but you get on a beanbag or a pillow or a mattress, a camping mattress. It will be on the ground, and for about an hour and 15 minutes, we'll tell you stories. And that's how the Sheet Fort is different.
This year's Sheet Fort experience has been put together by Erica, Sean Philip Mabry, and Christy Hall. This year's theme is Show and Tell. Erica addresses the group, introducing the concept.
So what we have is Show and Tell, the second Sheet Fort show, the second Sheet Fort experience. Mm-hmm. And you understand the concept of the show. It's it's more like a variety show.
Right.
Lots of music, lots of visuals, and it's reading. So it goes from kind of like vignette to vignette to vignette. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily related. We, Christy and Sean and I, have written the show in the sense that we have curated it. So we have found all of this text, whether it's Craigslist or these scraps and letters that we have, and we have grouped them in ways that we feel like complement each other, fit each other. Often, they have their own song. We have the format, which is on the first page of it. This is subject to change because this is just like what we've been dreaming about, like how we feel like it's probably going to be, mm-hmm. but it may change.
Art Lab Theater's experimentation is evident in all work the company has undertaken. Its first play, Bombs, Babes, and Bingo, was based on the life of a scientist and how his life falls apart. The play was bookended by two fixed scenes. A series of 10 more scenes was determined with the help of a game of bingo. According to the math conducted by an Art Lab member, there are about 39,916,000 versions of the play.
I love the play, actually, because of that number. It was never the same. And that math, I can't check that math for you, but I can say that the formula never repeated. There are so many possibilities. And what we were interested in was not, you know, how strange it would be if we did all of this out of order, but what would the story be if we did it out of order? And if you can do that with narrative. So that was fascinating to see that, like, the story of this man's life, which was, you know, the play, he was a scientist and he had a family and his life kind of, you know, fell apart. But to see all of this happen out of order was a different experience each night, but it was always the same, I guess, big picture.
Apart from this year's Sheet Fort experience, the theater company hopes to work on a project based on the concept of place and home and Super Fund America.
The Superfund is a part of the place project, but we started with Superfund, and it's by visiting a town called Pitcher, Oklahoma. Okay, and we started by going out there and visiting and interviewing, because there are 7 families still left, and it's a long project. And so our in the summer, actually, what the sheet for it is an effort to raise the capital for rent for a space so that we can do our place project. And within the place project, the summer lab will be the questions of Superfund, the questions of home. We actually really want someone to loan us a house for the summer so that we can do the lab in the house and hopefully have a performance in the house. So if we had small audiences and had simultaneous things happening in the house. This is an idea that we've had for a while, and we really want to do this, is to just stage it in the rooms, kind of like an installation. And of course, it'd be very small and very intimate, and maybe a few at a time, but that may be something that you see us do in June, actually.
For now, the Sheet Vote experience promises to be a unique, intimate one. For this year's event again, Matt Miller's studio will be covered with sheets. The space will be cozy and secretive, where stories of others will be told as one's own.
There was my friend in Texas sent me an email because I was taking submissions from all over, and he told me a story that stayed with him. He was in Starbucks and he drove up, and the teller told him that his drink had been paid by the person in front of him, that pay it forward. And apparently everyone was doing it. And so he paid for the next one, and apparently it was happening everywhere. That he submitted that story. But there's also some stranger stories. There's my friend in Switzerland is featuring a ladder that she made for her cat. And she has a video made about it. It's different. Things like that.
The actors start practicing.
You're right. May 14th, 2009, 3:06 a.m. Tuesday night around 11:30, on 53rd between 1st and 2nd, you came out of the subway and I followed you. You looked over your shoulder, saw me, and started walking faster. I ran up, grabbed your arm, took your purse and ran away.
The second Sheet Vote experience will be hosted by Artist Laboratory Theater at Matt Miller Studio near the Fayetteville Town Square this Friday and Saturday.
November 27, 2009, 11:47 a.m. You were discharging a Thanksgiving Day's feast worth of victuals and booze onto the pavement of Market while I cheered you on from the car behind yours. You played your part perfectly, encumbering the city with freshly minted aromas of regurgitated cranberry sauce and vodka. I played mine with equal grace, impregnating the vacant morning air with the clamorous hootings of a drunkard.
Doors will open at 7:30 p.m. and performance begins at 8 p.m. There is limited seating. Tickets are $10 each and can be purchased on the Art Lab website, artlabthetre.com. You can also support the group financially by donating on their website. All donations are tax deductible.
Hey. You just left our apartment with your broker and cute friends. You know it was the one where the power had just died? My roommate and I both proclaimed an infatuation with the lot of you when you left. I have one problem, though. You came in, saw my bedroom, the terrible state of our bathrooms, piles of video games, and the fact that I sleep on the floor.
A top puzzle creator will be on the University of Arkansas campus. Ed Pegg's puzzles have been used by Will Shortz on NPR's Weekend Edition Sunday, Games Magazine, The New York Times, and Japan Airlines In-Flight Magazine. He served as a consultant to the CBS series Numbers. He's titled his lecture for Here, Instant Fame, Using Computers to Solve Old Puzzles. He told Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellams that he'll provide examples like a classic puzzle involving a stack of pancakes.
And you want to sort them so that the biggest one is on the bottom and the smallest one is on the top. And you want to know what's the fewest number of flips with your spatula you can use to sort those pancakes. And you can look this up. The sequence for this on Online Encyclopedia of Integer Sequences, OEIS.org, is A058986. And you can use a computer to try to solve small stacks of pancakes to try to minimize the number of flips. And a rather famous person once looked at this problem, his name was Bill Gates. This was his only paper.
So is that part of the underlying promise here, that there's a chance you could become a multi-billionaire?
It always helps to know how to use a computer, especially today, because we've got the most powerful computers that have ever existed. And what we've got casually is millions of times more powerful than anything that existed in the 80s.
And that's somewhat staggering when you think about that. I mean, the exponential growth in the power of computers that's taken place.
Pretty much any problem that got looked at more than 10 years ago, you can pretty much completely trump anything that was done back then. All you have to do is look up what the problem, if you can find the code, rerun that, and you'll probably greatly improve. And the more obscure the problem is, the greater the chance that no one's just even looked at it.
When you're creating a puzzle for, the Japan Airlines In-Flight Magazine or Games Magazine, something that is going to be seen by a variety of different people of gaming experience or puzzle experience, what do you try to put into that puzzle to reach the widest possible audience as far as participation?
The first thing, usually those are word puzzles, and the first thing is that it has to be something well-known. You can't make a puzzle out of something very obscure. And I developed a puzzle for this talk. It's being given in Fayetteville.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the University of Arkansas is, Fayetteville. So add ICS to the end of that. Fayettevillex.
Mm-hmm.
And rearrange those letters to get something everyone should have. So that's a two-word phrase, and that's a well-known two-word phrase, and I just happened to notice that Fayetteville was in there. So I used that as the basis of a puzzle.
Is this something you find you can't really turn off?
Me looking for things like that?
Yes.
Yeah, I when I'm searching, actually my computer is doing these searches most of the time.
Mm.
If I lived 30 years ago, I'd be in much worse shape, because to make that puzzle would have taken me weeks to do. And now I can just, here's an idea, and I'll toss this at my computer, and in seconds I've got something. Or not. A lot of times I won't find anything interesting. So basically what people see is the stuff that was actually interesting.
Which is more satisfying for you? Solving somebody else's clever puzzle or creating a clever puzzle?
I would have to say creating. It's sometimes hard to tell whether or not a puzzle is going to be a good one. And there are certain people I trust, like Andrea Gilbert, who does mazes, Robert Abbott, who does various interesting mazes, and Oscar Van Deventer. A new one is a Japanese puzzle maker, Naoki Inaba. Those people always make really good puzzles. Some people make poor puzzles, and it's hard to tell whether or not somebody's coming up with something really fabulous right off.
And what is the measure for you of a good puzzle? Because a good puzzle has to be, I would assume, solvable after some point.
Yes. For example, Sudoku puzzles. You can have a various range of difficulties in a Sudoku puzzle, but some are really, 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 really tricky schemes. There's like 10 human approachable solving techniques for a Sudoku puzzle, and then there's there's something called Bowman's Bingo, which to do by hand would require several days of work. Those are purely in the realm of computers, and they should stay there.
Ed Paig, will deliver the lecture Instant Fame, Using Computers to Solve Old Tricks, tomorrow night at 7 in the Reynolds Auditorium on the University of Arkansas campus. The talk is free. And Ed Paig says he will give the answer to the fateful puzzle he mentioned in his conversation with Kyle within the first few minutes of his talk tomorrow night. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. A separate but complimentary art exhibition to First Thursday will debut April 7th at Gaylord's in Fayetteville. The show, called Worst Thursday, will feature several artists' work ranging from photography to painting to video. Zach Waite, the exhibition's organizer, says Worst Thursday was a friend's first suggestion for the art show's name. Waite kept the name because he says he liked the fact that it sounded like First Thursday, so people will connect the two events. Amber Paradin is one of the artists participating in the showcase.
I think it's just going to be a really beautiful collaboration of some really undiscovered artists that I think don't get noticed as much as they should. You know, I think that sometimes, I feel like sometimes these artists, or all artists in general, really don't get the recognition that they need. And so I feel like this is a really interesting venue to, and it's perfect timing. It's First Thursday, so it's all going to kind of blend together beautifully, hopefully. I think that's Zach's intention, is to just expose some people that need to be exposed and need a venue to get their art out there.
Paradin says she really blossomed in high school, and it was then that she decided to study art in college. She attended the University of Arkansas and earned her Bachelor's of Fine Arts in printmaking.
I fell in love with printmaking because it wasn't the norm. I think that there's a lot of misconceptions, and it's really an overlooked medium, I feel like. And so I had no idea what it was until I went to college, and then I started dabbling with it and got really dirty with it, and I liked that, and it was new. So I really pushed my bounds with that and went outside of painting, which is what I was going to do, and I really found a new way to express myself with printmaking.
Paradin enjoys making etchings, which involves drawing into a metal plate or etching it with acid, rubbing oil on the plate, and then running it through a printing press. Printmaking may not always result in the originally desired creation. However, while working with local artist and sculptor Hank Kaminsky, she learned that that is part of the process.
He's a huge inspiration to me because he's the one person that said that when you're creating something, and if something goes wrong, to embrace that, and he called it a gift of the process. And so now I apply that to all of my work, because in printmaking, you never know when you're going to pull the paper off of the plate, if it's actually going to be successful or not, or there's going to be a smudge, or the ink's going to squirt wrong in the wrong place. But now I like to look at it as a gift of the process, because that's the one thing I took from Hank, that just his way of viewing art is not the standard view, I think, of what people normally look at it as.
I mostly work on large oil paintings for a pretty long time, gradually building them up.
Another artist participating in the show is Sarah Norsworthy.
Also work in gouache on paper a lot, and a lot with ink drawings. And I also sew, I make clothing and do a lot of that, which I was mostly doing a lot of that. Now I'm trying to get back into the painting studio.
Norsworthy works at Lifestyles Incorporated, a nonprofit organization that serves individuals with developmental disabilities in Benton and Washington counties. She teaches art at the nonprofit, and some of her students will also be showing their work at Thursday's showcase.
I think there's going to be a lot of really interesting work. I know several people in the show who do really amazing things, painting and music. The music's going to be fun. The people I work with at Lifestyles, I think it's going to be really fun to get to have them be part of an art show that's not just a Lifestyles art show, but like be real, be introduced to the art community and get to come to the opening and all of that. So that should be really interesting.
Paradin says she is looking forward to sharing her art with local residents.
I've done shows now, I guess, for about 5 years, 5 or 6 years. And so when I first started, it was a really humbling experience of, please don't ask me about my art. But now I'm excited to talk about it, because I create in my studio by myself all the time. And so to actually get out there and show somebody, it's gratifying to say, yeah, this is what I've created. And please enjoy it because I've been enjoying it by myself. So it's good to get feedback from people, whether it's negative or positive. I think it's good to hear.
Worst Thursday begins at 5 o'clock Thursday afternoon, and admission is free. Music will be provided by several groups, including the Nathan MacLeod Group, Messy Sparkles, and Acid of the East. This is Ozarks at Large, and it's time for our daily giveaway. Mm-hmm. Today, we are giving away one pair of tickets to the Kurt Elling Quintet and the John Pizzarelli Quartet, who will both be at the Walton Arts Center Sunday at 7 p.m. Now, earlier in the show, we talked about the raffle ending, today being the last day for you to be able to buy your raffle for the Arkansas State Lottery. And that got us to thinking about the lottery in general, and everybody's very familiar with Powerball. So what we want to ask today is, what is the name of Powerball's predecessor?
And you have three options. A is Thunderball, B, Mega Millions, C, Lotto America.
If you think you know the answer, or if you would just like to guess, give us a call at 1-800-522-5823. That's 1-800-522-KUAF. Again, your options are A, Thunderball, B, Mega Millions, or C, Lotto America. Just give us a call now if you have a guess, and good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 6th of April, 2011. It's the birthday of the Shoshone woman Sacagawea, born in Idaho sometime around 1789. Kidnapped at the age of 10 by the Hidatsa tribe, sold into slavery, bought by a French-Canadian trapper who made her one of his two wives. And when Lewis and Clark hired him to guide them to the Pacific, Sacagawea was part of the package. She was a teenager, she had a two-month-old baby on her back, and she could speak half a dozen Indian languages. She also knew which plants were edible. And when Indian tribes saw the Lewis and Clark expedition approaching, and they saw there was a woman with a baby, the Indians assumed they were peaceful, and this saved Lewis and Clark a lot of trouble. When the trip was over, Sacagawea received nothing for all of her work. She died in 1812 of a fever at the age of 23, and 8 months later, William Clark legally adopted her two children, Jean-Baptiste and Lisette. It's the birthday of Merle Haggard, born Bakersfield, California, 1937. And it was on this day in 1895, Oscar Wilde was arrested in room 118 of the Cadogan Hotel in London for gross indecency for sodomy. He was sentenced to 2 years of hard labor, slept on a wooden plank. For the first several months, he was not allowed writing utensils or paper. And when he finally got them, he wrote his famous poem, The Ballad of Reading Jail. Here's a poem for today by Jacqueline Berger, entitled Why I'm Here. Because my mother was on a date with a man in the band, and my father, thinking she was alone, asked her to dance. And because years earlier, my father dug a foxhole, but his buddy, sick with the flu, asked him for it. So he dug another for himself. In the night, the first hole was shelled. I'm here because my mother was 27, and in the 50s, that was old to still be single. And because my father wouldn't work on weapons, though he was an atomic engineer. My mother, having gone to Berkeley, liked that. My father liked that she didn't eat like a bird when he took her to the best restaurant in L.A. The rest of the reasons are long gone. One decides to get dressed, go out, though she'd rather stay home. But no, Melancholy must be battled through. So the skirt, the cinched belt, the shoes, and a life is changed. I'm here because Jews were hated, so my grandparents left their villages, came to America, married one who could cook, one whose brother had a business, married longing and disappointment, and secured in this way the future. It's good to treasure the gift, but good to see that it wasn't really meant for you. The feeling that it couldn't have been otherwise is just a feeling. My family, around the patio table in July, I've taken over the barbecuing that used to be my father's job. Ask him how many coals, though I know how many. We've been gathering here for years, so I believe we will go on forever. It's right to praise the random, the tiny god of probability that brought us here, to praise not meaning but feeling, the still warm sky at dusk, the light that lingers, and the night that when it comes is gentle. A poem by Jacqueline Berger, Why I'm Here, from The Gift That Arrives Broken, published by Autumn House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith and written by Stephanie Wilbur-Ash. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Before Writer's Almanac, we asked you today's trivia question. We were talking about the lottery earlier in the show and got us thinking about Powerball. And what we want to know is, what was Powerball's precursor? Because it was not always called Powerball.
Mm-hmm. And we gave you three options. A was Thunderball, B was Mega Millions, and C was Lotto America. And the correct answer is C, Lotto America.
Mm-hmm. And when it was introduced as Lotto America, that was in 1988. And it was in 1992 that they changed the name to Powerball.
Correct. And we also have yesterday's winner's name. Yesterday's winner was Ryan McCraw from Fayetteville, who won himself a pair of David Sedaris tickets. So congratulations, Ryan.
Yes. And today's winner will win a pair of tickets to the John Pizzarelli Quartet and the Kurt Elling Quintet, who will be at the Walton Arts Center at 7 p.m. on Sunday.
Correct. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Alabama, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. KUAF has proudly served as your source for NPR programming for the past 26 years. You can listen online at our website, kuaf.com.
Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
Thanks so much for listening today. Kyle Kelms will be back in the studio tomorrow with an all-new edition at noon. But before we leave, we're going to leave you with a song by Joe Purdy, who will be playing a free show this evening on the University of Arkansas campus at RZ's Coffee House. Have a great day.
I got troubles, Lord, but not today. Cause they're gonna wash away, they're gonna wash away. And I have sins, Lord, but